Everybody knows what LDA is.
LDA is local density estimation. Is that? I think it's loud enough. It's a small room.
This is to record.
Oh, to record. Oh, sorry, I didn't know. You know.
So you watch what you say. Because your friends will know.
Oh, I was. I didn't know it. Yeah, it's so serious. So now LDA is a standard tool for calculating electronic structure. It was indeed very powerful. So actually, it achieved the level of predictness. So it could predict equilibrium structures. So quite often spectra and so on. But there are still something which it can do. And now I will tell you about this method developed cooperation with actually a lot of people. Some of them are present here. So what is the idea? While LDA was indeed very powerful and can do and does a lot of things, there are still some systems where LDA doesn't work. First of all, that's so-called mod insulators, which are the good example are transition metal oxides, where by standard calculation, you will have a metal with partially filled D-band, and experimentally we know that there should be rather wide gap insulators. Yes. Well, but let us say, what is a metal or insulated ground state property or not? So it's called difference between insulated metal is ground property of excitation. What?
But he also means that if you don't worry too much about why you do LDA and you look at the cold sham spectrum, then often it's a reasonable spectrum, and then sometimes it's not, and so it's in the cases where it's not.
If you want ground state, then another example is, for example, here it's parent compound of high TC, which must be antiferromagnetic insulators. They gave them paramagnetic metals. So magnetism is ground state property or not?
That's a repeated discussion in the workshop.
Yeah.
Two weeks ago, we had a discussion already.
You emphasized that, being a metal or insulator
is a ground state property.
Yeah.
You just calculate the N and the N plus 1, N minus 1
ground
states, and
then. Oh, yes, purely scholastical, yeah? You see, if you obtain a metal instead of insulator, it's not interesting ground state or not ground state, it's just wrong. It's not upon how do you call it. It's just wrong physics. So there are two approaches for solving this problem. One, as I've got, is LDA. LDA cannot do these things, but it's sub initio. It doesn't contain any adjustable parameters. And the most important, all parameters needed for calculation can be calculated inside LDA. For example, Coulomb interaction, which governs metal insulator transition in mod insulators, can be in quite good accuracy calculated in LDA. Adjustable parameters, I mean adjustable for physical data. And naturally, if you have some variational procedure and then you have just parameter, it's still ab initio. Okay, it's a question of terminology. I mean, it's just a parameter, an empirical parameter. Okay, let us just...
I guess what you're saying is you have to guess once a parameter, like what you need in a guess correlation potential, and then it's fixed, and it should apply to any possible...
The exchange correlation potential is fixed.
Yeah.
All calculations, yeah, whether it's sodium or yttrium binding copper oxide or nickel oxide or...
We have
the atom unit charge calculation, it's always the same, nothing has to be changed. That's the RDA.
No, even different forms of potentials, But now it's just one.
We solved the quantum Monte Carlo exactly.
And so
there is no difference.
In any case, in contrast to model approach, where you say that we have some model, and what about parameters? Parameters will be taken from this experiment or from this, or just a educational guess. In any case,
perhaps this question comes from, people use something that is beyond the LDA, or it's called the generalized gradient approximation, GGA. So in that sense, but LDA,
Let us start moving somewhere. We already spent 10 minutes. I didn't start.
You don't get to do more than your first slide.
I said the sense it's talk, regular seminar.
Oh. Dangerous to use this type of method. You see, from first principle, it may suggest to people outside the field that it's really a non-approximate calculation.
Okay,
I'm starting from first principle. That's a calculation.
Contrast to empirical models, where you address to some other experiments and they take numbers from there, here there is no empirical parameters, no input from outside. Another approach is based on model Hamiltonians, Hubbard model, Anderson model, configuration interaction. Well, where indeed all physics of motor insulators could be explained, but that is indeed empirical approach where you should take parameters, Coulomb parameter, interaction parameter, Hopping parameters, and so on, from some other, or calculations, or experimental data, and feed them. The question was, is it possible to combine these non-empirical and empirical approaches so that something could appear which is non-empirical but working? So here the main problem. The main problem is, was to map and LDA equations on tight-binding Hamiltonian, which is the basis of, for example, Hubbard model. In any Hubbard model or Anderson model, you always have some site-centered orbitals as a basis. And then electrons jumping from one orbital to another, from one atom site to another, and when they meet each other on the side, they have Coulomb interaction, increasing energy. So first we should construct this state-binding site-centered Hamiltonian, and for that very convenient is the so-called linear Muffington orbitals method in orthogonal approximation. It's just one of the methods for solving electronic structure problem. And it's quite conveniently already formulated in the tight bonded basis. It doesn't mean that the, what I will later tell is applied only for this M2. It could be applied for any kind of the approximations, but it still would need to introduce orbitals, atomic side orbitals. So what we have in LMTO, we have Hamiltonian, which is already written in real space, where we have diagonal terms and hopping terms between sides and orbitals. First approximation is the following. That, usually we have a lot of different orbitals, but we should take into account Coulomb interaction only for some subset. Usually it's well defined. It's D states of transition metal ions or F states of rare earth metal ions. So, what we need in order to describe these correlations, we want to add to LDA this Hamiltonian, which is just interaction, on-site interaction, direct and exchange interaction term. And here the main problem appears, how to correct for double counting, because in LDA we have already some Coulomb interaction and now we again introduce it. It is impossible to rigorously derive which part should be subtracted from LDA. We could only make a guesses. And the basis for our guess is the following. It is known that LDA indeed works quite well if you look at the total energy as a function of density. It's constructed in this way. Or, in more detailed formulation, we could say that the Coulomb interaction is a function of total number of electrons on site is well described by LDA. It's just suggestion, conjecture. It's not proven, yeah, but we know that indeed so. The total energies are quite nice. One electron energies, Kohn-Chem energies, could be quite bad, which are derivative of total energy of occupation. But total energies themselves are quite good. So, here is how the dependence of Coulomb interaction on total number of electrons and on spin projections of electrons should be like. So, we suppose that LDA gives good approximation for this term, and we subtract from LDA this term. So we subtract part which is a function of total number of electrons and add more detailed Coulomb interaction term where you have interaction on every particular orbital, so every pair of orbitals. Then in LDA, one electron energies are derivatives of total energy of occupation number. So if we make derivative of this LDA function minus double counting term, then we will obtain the so-called non-interacting diagonal elements of Hamiltonian, or just bare energy of orbitals excluding Coulomb interaction between orbitals. So that will be here. So it will be LDA, one electron, energy minus something which depends on total number of electrons. So, and in the end, we will obtain that our Hamiltonian would be non-interacting Hamiltonian, where we replace LDA diagonal terms with this epsilon naught and Hopping's kinetic energy term, and then interaction. So that is the definition of our approach.
So there is no double counting correction for the hopping.
It's not. We suppose that hopping is all right, and it's so. Yeah. That hoppings are quite nice, good.
Yeah. For example, the first equation, what does it have to mean? You calculate the Coulomb energy?
This one?
Yeah.
It's not a question, it's a definition. Well, not a definition. We can prove that in LDA, in density functional theory, one electron energies are derivative of total energies.
Yeah, what is it
in this one?
What is the
orbital? Look, in LDA, there is not particular orbital. There is just d orbital, d energy, because it's functional of total number, of density. In LDA, potential is a function of density. Mm-hmm. If you make it for this particular case, it will be that energy of D level is a function of total number of D electrons. So we obtain energy of D electrons as a function of total number of D electrons. And that's here.
But if you also
function
of the orbital, that's D, does D involve any physical property?
What do you mean orbital? Particular d orbital or just d electron, d orbital?
Maybe
because
we only have one
band. D can be omitted from there, right? D can be omitted from all orbitals.
No. Look here. In general, DA, we have density, yes, as a three-dimensional function, and you have potential, which is also three-dimensional function, yeah, in space. Now we map it on an ion problem. So we have an ion. In ion, we have SPD electrons, SPD orbitals, and we say that we are looking only for d orbitals. So we are looking only for d occupation number and only for d one electron energy.
So maybe I should say this another way. I think the question is what is that? In LDA, or density functional generally, you have nuclei, you dump in electrons, you figure out how to do the calculation, but you don't, you know, what comes out. In LDA plus U, in addition, you have to decide, based on physical information, what local orbital you're going to treat this way. You have to choose a D orbital and how it's going to be represented. That's an additional bit of input that goes into this procedure.
Okay, when
is
the D on the left hand side and
what
on the left hand
side? Just you mean here? Where is
the
D here?
You can put D here, right?
Oh, this N is the number of D electrons, yeah, sorry.
Okay, but that's physically, the D electrons are, they have hybridization with.
Yes, but.
So how do you know that the electrons are D electrons?
I will show later there will be a projection operator. It is possible to introduce it quite rigorously, so that we introduce some d orbitals, and then we make projection operator. So we project from whole space of wave function only d orbitals, so occupation d orbitals, so we could quite rigorously define.
The problem is that there's sort of notion of reasonably localized
the whole idea works only if indeed there are some orbitals which are well defined, well localized, and where electrons live long enough to fill interactions.
And there is a real problem with this when you go to say that they would have made a decision.
No.
At the beginning of the D-series where LDA to U does not work.
Yes, yeah.
But if you start with the model where electrons are well localized, then what's the point of building that it's an influence?
No, because indeed, the trick is here.
Other states that are just when they well localize, they spend a long time at an atom compared with the hopping time to the nearest neighbor. It doesn't mean that they stay there forever. They just hop slowly.
But they're not completely localized. They spend enough time to treat them as more or less localized, but not forever.
Another question about
the Huffing.
Yes. There are two amazing elements where one form is on one side and three are on the other.
Colon or kinetic energy? Colon amazing elements.
They would, in principle, address the Huffing. Is that just numerically unimportant? Because
you no, you see, let us say that this inter-site column interaction indeed gives you two parts. One, just on one electron, on diagonal, and another, you're completely correct, we could renormalize Huffings. Usually, this is not taken into account. But we are just working on it, and there are cases where it is indeed very important. For example, I believe that this barium bismuthite, which doesn't work not with LDA, not with LDA plus U, could be explained only if you take into account that inter-site Coulomb interaction renormalized Huffings. So it is indeed so, but we not discuss it here, because it's quite a rare case.
But if you put that U in there, mm-hmm. and you treat inter-site correlations as well as local correlations, yeah. you get that minimization.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Well, let us say that it is possible, but now what kind of interaction Hamiltonian I add? Only on-site. I could write exactly in the same way inter-site Coulomb interaction and then treat it. So it's more general procedure. So that's definition. And now, of new Hamiltonian, of new functional. And now, what to do with it? How to solve it? So the simplest way to solve it is Hartree-Fock or mean field approximation. But it is spin orbital site unrestricted mean field, which means that we could have different potential and different occupation on every orbital, every spin orbital on every site if you have large enough supercell. So when people say Hartree-Fock, they usually mean spin orbital restricted Hartree-Fock, which is quite dull approximation. But spin orbital and site unrestricted Hartree-Fock could give quite large variety, very, very rich variety of solutions. Well, but still, as a Hartree-Fock, it, for example, cannot treat paramagnetic, real mode insulator, which is paramagnetic. And then there is another approximation, which is dynamical mean field theory, which we treated in iterative perturbation theory, but it actually could be treated in any way. So dynamical mean field theory converts the lattice problem into impurity, effective impurity problem, and then this impurity could be solved by non-crossing approximation, quantum Monte Carlo, hexagonalization, any kind of thing. So here we have two ways to solve new Hamiltonian.
Yes,
that's LDA plus U, yeah.
Number two is something else.
Let us say number two is dynamical mean field, and then you add something how it is solved. Yeah. Yes, yeah, that's true.
Well, to be fair, I mean, if once you've got yourself an effective Hamiltonian, that's LDA plus U, and then how you solve it.
Yes, yes, I would say so, yeah.
You could put it in a Monte Carlo calculation, a common Monte Carlo calculation, and then it won't be.
Yeah, but that's not what people mean by LDA.
That's a jurisdictionally trademarked, right? Trademark is the field.
Well, yeah, okay. I don't. But
don't do that.
But one ought to say that the way LDA plus U refers to mapping into a many body Hamiltonian, and it's a separate issue.
How to solve it, yes.
So that would be the sensible way.
So, yes, just why LDA plus U is usually this? Because this is just appears. There is no just one paper on this, and that's it. So, all what was published and reported was the first one. But actually, the whole physical idea is indeed to map LDA on model Hamiltonian and then solve it as when you can. Yeah. So then, how this mean field part looks like? It's the following. First, this four greater term is decoupled by averaging of one of the operators, So we obtain matrix, this M prime and the double prime, and we have just one, two operator term. And here, that's how it's written, Hamiltonian, Minfield Hamiltonian, in most general way. So here we have orbitals. So that is projection operator. And that's very essential part of the whole approximation. That we say that there are some orbitals which are well localized, so that electrons live long enough there, and it is physically meaningful when we introduce orbitals. So then we introduce operator, which is projection operator, and then this operator can be used in any basis set. So there are realization of LDA plus U on plane waves, on pseudo-potentials, where basis is completely non-atomical and thus plane waves. And so we have a matrix of occupation, and we have matrix of corrections, which is a function of matrix of occupation. And so here we have matrix elements of Coulomb interaction, which are expressed quite standard way via Slater integrals and yes. Yeah. On previous slide?
Yeah.
Sorry, I came 2 minutes late, maybe you explained.
Yes, yeah.
But let's stick with the LDA for a moment.
Yes.
In LDA, using a single quadratic general Hamiltonian.
Yeah.
And so I can call that the LDA Hamiltonian. Now that includes exchange and correlation.
Yes.
In the form of the so-called VXC.
Yes.
Right? But of course, the expectation value of this Hamiltonian does not give you the energy.
Yes.
That requires this capital EXC.
Yeah.
So when you speak about LDA and Hamiltonian, so I didn't calculate energies, I'm just not clear how you handle that kind of
energy. That is indeed the trick. The problem is how to map one approximation and completely different approximation. LDA and model Hamiltonians are not derived from something. They're just ad hoc invented. So you cannot prove directly how to make connection. So what I say is that I don't look for potential, their potential. I look to the one electron energy of D level as a functional of number of D electrons in this ion. And that's all I take from LDA. So I didn't take potential, I didn't treat a heart rate part, exchange part, and correlation part, which would be too complicated. I just say, look here, we have ion calculated in LDA. In this ion, we could calculate the energy, one electron energy of D level, of this D ion, as a function of number of D electrons in this ion. And that's it. That's all we take from LDA.
Let me pin you down a little bit more. You're not taking the energy expression from LDA
yes.
and correcting that to get you are.
Yeah.
Okay. To get your
you
effective
are
one
taking
way
it or you are not taking it.
Sorry, sir?
I think the question was asked with a minor sign.
Yes.
Can you start your question again?
Originally, you formulated this, I believe, as a correction to the energy functional, the density functional.
Yes, it's written as the functional, yeah. But right. It's maybe more reasonable would be just write down Hamiltonian. Yeah.
The one electron Hamiltonian?
Yeah.
Do not worry about where it comes from.
Yes.
You have no, formal basis.
Because it's just definition. Let's say, let us introduce such and such functional. I didn't derive it. I just say that let us write down this functional. We add something, we subtract something, and we believe that it has some physical meaning. It's not derived. It's not derivation.
So you picture it more as a simplified form of the quasi-particle Dyson equation.
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
When U is zero, you get the early
yes,
energy.
It's just by construction. Just by construction. See, it's not because my function is more general than LDA. It just is constructed in such a way that when you zero, you've got LDA.
Not just the Hamiltonian, but in other words, you get the LDA orbital and you get the LDA energy.
But again, just by construction. We have something which has the limit zero when U is zero.
So when you
speak of
an E sub LDA,
yes. Yeah.
What precisely is that?
Let us say that it means that when we make derivatives of this functional, then we will have Hamiltonian, we will have equations which would be LDA equations plus some potential correction term. This one. That's what this means. So indeed, I could start just from here. See, it would be on the same level of accuracy of rigorousness. I could say that let us just write down the Hamiltonian which has the following form: LDA plus this correction, and this correction would be constructed due to the following reasoning: that if we would have average interaction, average Coulomb interaction, then that would give us zero. But average energy, and that was what supposed in when we write down this functional.
I think there is a little more systematic way to formulate the problem, which would suggest improved approximation. We might talk about that sometime, but let's go ahead. Let you get a little further before we stop it.
See, the problem is indeed that every
fixation value.
Yes.
This
of this new Hamiltonian.
Does that give me what you consider the energy?
You mean total energy or one electron energy? Total energy will have a meaning, yeah. It's, for example, total energy is a function of parameters of lattice structure and so on. Has all been the meaning of it.
Well, I might rather say I disagree and go ahead.
No, let us finish it. I understand that people expect that there is LDA and any correction to LDA should be a step to rigorous functional, to exact functional. It is not the case here, definitely not. I did not make generalization of LDA, which is more better and more exact than LDA. I just mapped LDA on model Hamiltonian and tried to combine something.
I think everybody understands that you're not trying to correct installation.
Yes, definitely not, definitely not. Yeah.
I mean, but you're taking Hamiltonian as three separate parameters right now,
yeah.
The Hopkins, the Hilton, these, and
the yes.
And this is not completely clear to me how you really determine each of them. I mean, like, for example, if I seem to understand that if U is, all the U's are zero and you're thinking Hamiltonian, then the D electron energy would reproduce the irrational.
Yes, yeah. That's
what you mean. Then how do you choose the U?
That's next step. So could I come further? Yeah.
Yes.
So Walter, definitely, I not claim that I improved LDA. No, I didn't improve it.
I'm just trying to clarify something within LDA. Let's
it's not within. It's outside of LDA.
So U equals zero.
Yeah.
So the energy is not the LDA theory for the energy. Is not a Hamiltonian theory. There is a Hamiltonian, and so you were speaking about LDA Hamiltonians. I'm trying to find out what.
One electron, yeah. One electron, confirm equations,
yes,
and they
the expectation value that Hamiltonian does not give you the energy.
I guess I asked you I always think about the time. In my intention, it's more like an energy functional. This is my intention was more to write on an energy function. I mean, the basic version of the thing is when the order parameters, and probably the simplest thing is to say the difference in magnetic order parameters, right? first forget about orbitals. When that would be zero, if there wouldn't be an anti-paramagnetic order parameter, the paramagnetic LDA state would be identical to the paramagnetic LDA that you said, right? So what I observed is that in real life of insulators, the knot gap, when you write, try to write down any field to you, and you can do it, like Fokker, fairly well, right? You have to use U. In LSTA, there's a problem. You use the Stoner covering, basically. This was a simple observation, so you can improve on LSTA by saying use U instead of the Stoner parameter to drive the antiferromagnetism and to drive the mean field block gap in the Cochem spectrum. Right? Now, in addition, there's the orbital polarization out there, which I also think carries some physics to it. Right? So I like to say that this is really about how does the total energy know about order parameters. And in that sense, I like to say that you better think in terms of density functionals instead of all the whole values, etc. It's a basic problem in LSTA itself. And this was really meant to improve on one aspect of the problem, at least in the way I think about it.
Actually, it was formulated as a function of density plus occupation matrices. See? So it's formulated not just as Hamiltonian, but as a function of density and occupation matrix of some well-defined orbitals. And then, in this case, it has a meaning of energy of this new functional. Another story, what this new functional has to do with exact density functional. Maybe nothing at all, yeah? But still, total energies are reasonably well defined here. As a function of occupation matrix. So, could I proceed?
Yeah.
yes. So, then, some few practical questions. How matrix elements of Coulomb interaction are calculated. So that is first part is integrals of harmonics, which are just tabulated, and we need three slatter integrals for D states and four slatter integrals for F states. So in this case, we can calculate in LDA screened Coulomb interaction parameter and exchange interaction parameter of Stoner. Let me finish this and then I will tell how I calculate Coulomb parameter. So that if you calculate an LDA U and J, Coulomb and exchange parameter, then we identify U with F0 integral, and then fixing ratio of 2 to 4, which is just empirically known, that's indeed quite stable ratio. Then we could from these two parameters, we could calculate three slatter integrals. Now, how we calculate this U and J? It is done, it can be done in two ways, in two methods. First is constraint. When you fix occupancy of the orbital and to calculate total energy as a function of this constraint. And then you obtain total energy as a function of number of electrons, and then second derivative of total energy as a function of electrons will give us Coulomb interaction U. And the second method is practically the same, but then we just switch off hybridization of these states with the rest, we treat them as pseudo-core, and then also calculate total energy as a function of this fixed number of d-electrons. So in both cases, we obtain screened Coulomb interaction. Screened because in both cases, we perform self-consistent LDA calculation where charge could move and screen. And I would like to emphasize that this U or these F parameters which you calculate are not really integrals of wave functions. They are some parameters which are fitted to reproduce constrained LDA calculations, so they are screened Coulomb interaction.
If you did calculate them with the orbitals of LDA and you took actual Coulomb interaction one over r and you cranked out the intervals,
would
you
bad.
Get something very different?
Yes, it's known. It's known, that's quite a bad approximation. Yeah. It's not only LDA, even if you will take Hartree-Fock orbitals of atoms and calculate certain integrals, you will be 30% off. It's known.
Off from LDA?
Not from LDA, from experiment.
Well, we don't know.
So that's how Coulomb interaction is calculated. And now a few words about this dynamic on mean field.
Yeah.
What do you mean treat orbitals?
So how in a
physical system, how could we define orbital? Yeah. Well, so how it is done? The easiest way is when we have LMTO, linear Muffington orbitals method, because there the basis of expanding wave function is already atomic-like, so that we could just took as a basis linear Muffington orbitals of d electrons. Also we could just take atomic orbitals. If your orbitals are well localized, that any kind of choice will give you approximately the same. If different approximation, different definition of orbitals will give different results, it means that your orbitals are not localized enough, and then the whole physical idea broke down. And for d orbitals of transition metal oxides, transition metal ions, and f orbitals of radials ions, it works. So you could use different kind of approximation. You see, formal valency problem from formal valency is that you have not only d electrons, you have s, p, and so on. So that if you will construct three-dimensional density, it will be indeed quite continuous. And then, if you just want to make total charge inside the atomic sphere, it will be not only d. Will be all other sp, and then indeed it will be very strongly depends on the radius. But if you are looking on d proper, then the number of d electrons does not vary too much with radius. We did some estimations with Ole Gunnarsson, and it was that if you choose different orbitals and different radius, reasonable choice for d electron of iron, for example, then the variation is something like 5% of the total number of electrons. So that we would say that occupancy is defined with the accuracy of 5%. Well, and now this dynamic of mean field theory. So we again take non-interacting Hamiltonian the same way as LDA plus U, but now we have this sigma self-energy term. Well, and how it is defined. So we calculate lattice Green function, where the sigma is on every side, and then we construct effective impurity problem. And that's just definition, so that this is the equation where we could extract hybridization delta. And then we fix this delta, so we obtain effective medium Bass Green function, where interaction is excluded. And then we must solve it, so that we should add real interaction, real Coulomb interaction term in Hamiltonian, and solve it for impurity in fixed effective medium. It could be done in many ways, at all quantum Monte Carlo, diagonalization, across an approximation. In the paper which we did recently, we did it in iterative perturbation theory, which is just renormalized second order perturbation term.
I mean, Christian,
you're
going to tell you.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have necessarily to refer to a modern model Hamiltonian you extract from the LDA in order to apply to infinity.
Yes,
the real life system. So what about starting out with the Hamilton, the theory of every single mass metaphysics, the Schrodinger equation, and then systematically apply D to infinity approximation to all dynamical.
No, you see, actually, I did not say this D infinity. It's just a way to map lattice problem on effective impurity one. And if this mapping is exact in D infinity limit, it has nothing to do with it.
Fine, that's not my question. My question is, could you do it for a real life Schrodinger equation?
Real life? What do you mean?
I mean, that is a real Schrodinger equation. Yes. I'm describing the real levels and all of that. And I can imagine that you can write down dynamical
field theory for that. Perturbation in what?
Full quantum electrodynamic Hamiltonian.
Okay.
So applying the dynamical field theory, you need lattice model.
Yeah.
Start from a lattice.
Yes.
Continuous space, you cannot really say what it means.
The coarse grain in principle of dynamical field theory matching to a lattice. This actually to an impurity problem.
But
if you start out with something which is
No,
of course
it's not, because the limit of
infinite
dimensions doesn't work.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I agree. If you want to do a strict 1 over D expansion, you can't do what I'm saying. But if you just say, okay, the dynamical mean field theory is equivalent to this coarse grain,
yeah.
Right, then you could do it.
But you need an automatic cutoff to start with.
Right.
So you need some, the simplest way is to do that.
But then still, I could sort of imagine that, you know, you can take a localized basis and stand up the true Schrodinger equation in terms of the localized basis set, and then you could apply, you know, there's an underlying system that is not there. And then you could try to apply systematically this local approximation result that you were able to call it. Has that been tried, and what would be the differences on the head?
It's really not clear how to do that in the continuum, as was pointed out by Gallo. I mean, if we knew how to do that, we should certainly do it, but not clear how to do that. Concerning looking at atoms, you know, if you're interested in a big atom, actually the limit of infinite D has been looked at by some chemistry people, and it's a quite different limit than what's going on here, precisely because of the continuum state. You actually end up minimizing just a tiny bit.
Well, in any case, indeed, everything becomes very simple when you have atomic type orbital basis set. But it doesn't mean that it's valid only for this basis. It, in principle, could be generalized. But let us say that now I'm talking about this atomic tight binding atomic type orbital basis set formulation. So now. I would like to show some few results. Yeah. So, just the scheme, what kind of correction we have and what kind of result. So, potential correction, which I showed previously, was quite a complicated formula. But if you will forget about different orbital polarization interaction and just look to average Coulomb interaction, then it's approximately this. So that correction acting on some particular orbitals is defined by the occupancy of these particular orbitals in such a way that when you have occupied orbitals, it's minus u 1 half, and when it's unoccupied, it's plus u 1 half. So that when you have LDA level, you have splitting by U, so empty bands goes up plus U1 half and occupied goes down U1 half. That's the main effect. Now, what usually we have in LSDA. In LSDA, we have splitting.
What is
that? Spin. Local spin density approximation. LDA is paramagnetic, so you don't have spin polarization. In LSDA, you have spin dependence, but only for total spin up, spin down. So in LSDA, you can have splitting of orbitals, of bands, let us say. If one band is occupied, another is unoccupied, then you could have even insulator. For example, manganese oxide is insulated in LSDA. Gadolinium, also F states are splitted. But in this case, the splitting between occupied and occupied state is defined by Stoner parameter I or J, it's the order of 1 EV. Well, in reality, they should be splitted by U, which is order of magnitude larger, usually 8, 6 EV. And in the result, for example, the copper oxides, where it in principle it is possible to produce gap if you would increase the strength of exchange. But the band widths are quite large in copper oxides, and exchange direction is too weak to produce a gap. But nevertheless, it would be possible to produce insulator for copper oxide if you just find a way to increase exchange interaction. But in cobalt oxide, for example, where we have partially filled band with the same spin projection, we need some symmetry breaking in order to produce a gap. So LSDA never will give you insulator in cobalt oxide. And, for example, the same story for vanadium oxides, where we have partially filled spin up. So here is few results for energy gaps and magnetic moments in transition metal oxides. So, as I told, manganese oxide has a gap in LSDA, but it was quite small. It's strongly increased in a given experiment. Cobalt oxide was metal. Now it is insulated with wide gap.
Is there any
other? Yes. Our rifle is LGFSU
or
LGFSU? Yes, sorry. It is quite old view, yeah. Where it was obvious what I'm talking about. Sorry. Again, nickel oxide has very small gap, now it is sizable, and copper oxide was again metallic in LDA, and it's insulated now. But also, it's quite strong correction to value of magnetic moment, which is the ground state property. For example, for nickel oxide, it's nearly 60% increasing. In agreement with experiment. And for copper oxide, definitely it's just from zero, because copper oxide gave non-magnetic, non-spin polarized solution. Yes, indeed, I should emphasize that mean field theory of the LDA+U cannot give you local moments in paramagnetic. It only can give you magnetism if it is long range order.
What would that LDA plus U predict for pure copper?
Pure copper?
Cobalt.
Cobalt.
Yes.
Metal, yeah?
No.
For metals, unfortunately, results would be maybe not so good, because it's not localized, it's not insulated, yeah. So it's just mean field theory, doesn't work well for metals. For metals,
if you went back, the question was, if you went back to iron, cobalt, and nickel,
yeah,
which are good metals, and now you gear up to do, now if you deploy that in the context of a metal, will you get metals, or you
will
get insulation?
to get metals because the colon interaction in cobalt, for example, is not so strong. So I would still get, have a metal.
You don't have to do any.
Yes, I will have metal. Just the results would be quite bad.
Let me give a different example. These were actually done by Chizik and Zawadzki.
Yeah.
Lanthanum 2, copper 4.
Yeah.
They did LDA plus U reproduced.
Yeah.
What Vladimir had done, which was to produce a nice antiferromagnetic insulator, which is what the right answer is.
Yeah.
Then they did lanthanum copper 3, which is perovskite.
Yeah.
I don't think the material was known then. It produced the gap. Unfortunately, lanthanum copper 3 is a metal.
Yes.
A very plain metal, apparently.
Yeah. So,
you have to know.
Yeah.
Basically, no wind applied
is enough to apply. Yes, there is indeed few problems where it doesn't work, and all these are, or you already on metallic side, or you are on the edge of metallic transition. So that this method works well if you have well-defined insulators, then it works well.
So well-defined insulators, you can predict that they are
insulated. No, not only insulated. It's not so, yeah. You could predict much more. I just now want to show what we predict. Yeah. But no, it's true. That you should know that insulator, then you could depress insulator. Yeah. If you know that it's metal, then you use method which works for metal, and it works indeed.
Let me qualify that. This could be applied to gadolinium, to the S-state for gadolinium.
Yeah.
And it seems to work quite well there. It doesn't bother the SD state, basically the same metallic. It does what it should to the F-state. So,
I mean, the basic problem is a different one than the approximation. I mean, the basic problem is that the constraint method to calculate use fails in metal, fails at the metal insulator position. Right? So the reason that problem would be a disaster is that I think that you calculated by constraint.
Yes, will be too large.
Be like
because in metals, we have additional screening. We have dynamical screening in metals. And dynamical screening isn't taken into account here.
It's not easy to understand what goes wrong with constraints.
So metal sort of transition definitely cannot be described by Minfield theory. While but dynamic Minfield theory can describe metal Z transition. It can describe paramagnetic motor insulator. So it's needed to.
Yeah, but still, I mean, the thing that Jan is raising is completely valid. I mean, even if you do better than concrete bar and you do the MST, you still have to plug in the value of U.
Yes, definitely so. But see, there are two different questions. So, first is how to calculate a good U, and the second, that even with good U, mean field. We will not never give you paramagnetic motor insulator, will never give you strongly correlated metal and so on. So you need to include in your Hamiltonian dynamic fluctuation which will be described by self energy.
Get out of your Hamiltonian the dynamical fluctuations. I mean, you say it's a question of mapping. I mean,
yes,
if you map to a sufficiently rich Hamiltonian, obviously you can really map it and then solve it well, and then all the dynamic equation comes out from the solution.
In any case, in the Hamiltonian there must be term which describes dynamical fluctuations. That's
you get a Hamiltonian which has a Coulomb interaction in it, and that's if you solve that problem exactly, it will give you the exact answer.
Well, if it will be possible.
The problem with the Hamiltonian, obviously, the Hubbard Hamiltonian has far more dynamics than is being reflected by the solution. Right?
But here we are blaming the question you are trying to answer. Is it the U or is it the how well you solve your Hubbard Hamiltonian? And you don't know which one is it.
It's both. The U. It's both.
Both.
And Cobalt, I would claim, is to first order the U. And when you do any amount of density theory to the effect of molar Hamiltonian, it won't cure the basic problem. I mean, I think it's just interesting, right? Because you don't quite understand why these U's calculated by constraints and sequential that are so wrong, because what LDA tells you is basically all the Coriolanian story, right? When you change the occupancy, you get a lot of S electrons back, right? And that is screening the U. That doesn't work, apparently, according to constraint LDA calculations. So we don't understand why U's are so small in itinerant transition metal systems. We don't understand it.
Well, in general, we know that dynamical fluctuation, which is mechanical screening.
Well, it really is. I think that if there's still the notion of U, I don't think we are really sure that U is so small, it's not understood.
But what you're saying really is that the problem with applying LDA plus U to something like cobalt is that the U is not dominant correction. LDA plus U works where the U on this particular set of orbitals you choose, one orbital, is the dominant correction.
And no, you do it with transition density. So, for instance, the approximational density, finding U, when you find it, it should be too big by factors of 3 or 4.
I don't think that's the problem. I don't think that. I think there are, say, inter-site Bs, which might well
it's be. It's also possible, yeah.
Might be after mapping to a better end of that. It's just more than the U is not as dominant as the student there.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a bit harder, right? Because it is when you're comparing articles really based on this small screening length of metals. Right? So how the heck can you screen is not going to touch by anything outside the atomic volume basically, and then you can go through this story of the isolated in the deal that's a very best plan, that is wrong. That's because that is basically do this constraint LDA.
Let me show what LDA plus U can do. So we quite lengthy discuss what it cannot do, but it can do something nevertheless. So here is a list of results. The first is that we could now obtain orbital polarization and orbital ordering, where LSDA could produce spin polarization and spin ordering. Here we have symmetry breaking. Now we could have different potential, different orbitals, so we could obtain orbital polarization and orbital order. It was demonstrated for potassium, copper, fluorine, and lanthanum manganese. And here is something which only such ab initio method can do, is to reproduce Jahn-Teller distortion. Now, because still this method, even if it looks like just model Hamiltonian, it still has capacity of creating total energy as a function of coordinates of atoms. And I will show just a few results. Here is potassium copper fluorine. It is copper 2 plus D9 configuration, one hole in copper shell, and the problem is how this hole is oriented or polarized on what orbitals. And it was suggested that it would be such kind of orbital polarization, orbital ordering, which agrees with the Jahn-Teller distortion, cooperative Jahn-Teller distortion present in this compound. So we did calculations without distortion, that I should emphasize. So that if you would have distortion, then even LDA will give you some kind of orbital polarization. But we didn't have distortions, it was cubic. And even with cubic, we obtained this kind of orbital polarization, orbital order, which is exactly what people suggested before. And then we calculated the total energy as a function of Jahn-Teller distortion parameter. And normal LSDA doesn't give local minimum. So LSDA solution is stable against Jahn-Teller distortion. But with our correction, now have quite well-defined local minimum for distortion. So that was for orbital polarization, orbital ordering, and Jahn-Teller distortion. And second problem is charge ordering. And that's quite interesting story, that LSDA cannot give orbital charge ordering. So if you would have one electron per two sides, So we will have in LSD we would have one half on both of them. So we have uniform solution. And if you will try to move electron from one side to another, then LDA potential would increase on this side and decrease here, and charge density will move back. So we'll have again uniform solution. When we add Coulomb interaction, LDA plus U correction, it cancels this unphysical self-interaction. So that potential acting on electron on those sides doesn't depend on occupation of the site. And inter-site Coulomb interaction, which is always present in LDA, will give us charge ordered state. And we did it for iron 3 O4 magnetite.
So,
That if you have partial occupation, so that when you have one electron per two sides, then LSD will always give you uniform solution when you have one half of electron on every side. And it is stable against...
Sometimes
yes. But nevertheless, sometimes you have charge ordering, and LSD will always give you uniform solution. Yeah.
There's a little bit of tendency if you allow the environment to respond.
Yeah. Oh, you mean just polaron type, yeah? Mm-hmm. Polarons. Distortion.
Yes.
Yeah. So
it's also saying that in iron 3 or 4 there's on the LDA level no charge ordering at all, also when you allow for deformations.
But that's how Werner said that in principle deformation could give to localization, yes. Yeah.
But is it doing so in normal LSDA or not?
It depends on particular system. Yeah. For example,
every
for
four particularly,
yeah.
I mean that's a nice example
we use very well. Let us see. There we have electron on T2G shell, yeah, T2G subshell, yeah. And usually all distortions for T2G are much smaller than in G. So I did not do such kind of calculation. This distortion, but I would expect that it will not give us.
LDA is not playing according to your rule.
No, the problem is that in LDA we have some spurious self-interaction. So that when you have one half here, one half here, it should not depend on occupation, because electron doesn't interact with itself. But in LDA we have it. Oh yes, that's true. Yeah. So that if you would have wide enough bands, yes, that would do it. But it works here. So that this splitting between occupied and unoccupied would be of order of U. So if U is smaller than bandwidth, then LDA plus U will also give uniform direction. So actually, I could stop because now results are quite extensive that we already.
Okay, further questions? Let's thank Matt.
I'm actually curious about this, if the dimensions of big, this sort of short soundbite almost coming out.
There will be a review talk,
including one.
Yes,
sir.
So what you didn't finish telling us what happens when you do LDA plus U for this iron oxide.
Charge ordering happens. Yes, charge ordering happens. Actually, I just say that. Let us see if the solution would be stable in respect to such particular kind of ordering, and it was stable. And then to solve problem, we should check different ordering and see which one gives the lowest energy and so on. But I did only one ordering.
And that's the experiment you observed.
Yes. Oh, you see, that's more complicated problem. Actually, 50 years ago, we believed that this, but still after the 50 years, nothing is known. Yeah.
Is the solution you got the ferromagnet?
It's ferrimagnetic. Ferrimagnetic. See, I just suppose it. Yeah. I didn't vary different kind of ordering. I just got one type of spin ordering, one type of charge ordering, and got solutions. Got stable solutions. Experimentally, it's still not clear. It's known that it's more complicated than there were. But which one?
I think that Patsy has applied LDA plus U more thoroughly to that, but I'm not familiar with the results.
Who?
Happening?
For this? I know, but for this particular compound, I don't know if it's
not. I think so.
It's possible. Mm-hmm.
Like the chapter I read, some of the Benedict compounds, and I think apparently there's this story about it, which is
that. I know the story, yeah. We're working on it now.
Do you have a great
LDA plus U can reproduce charge ordering there, definitely can. Another story that the problem is which of the possible ordering is the lowest one, and that requires a lot of work.
What do you think?
I just took crystal structure and then tried to find, to calculate different type of charge ordering and see which one is lowest. Yes, yeah, for lowest, yeah. Sorry?
You have this charge ordering in the, below the transition temperature.
Yes, yeah. No, you see, naturally I don't have temperature in my method, so I always have zero T. Low temperature crystal structure.
Not very narrowly, but